Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
We're drawing near to the end of our Holy Curiosity series with author Wynne Collier. Each week we've been examining some of the fascinating questions that Jesus asked, and tonight's question could possibly be considered the most insulting one. Are you being willfully stupid? It's one that Jesus asked his disciples after they failed to get the message of one of his lessons. Let's find out what he really meant. Wynne Collier, welcome back to Open House.
Hey, thanks for letting me be part of the conversation.
The question is found in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 7. Let's set the scene first. The Pharisees, in other words, the religious leaders of the day, were criticizing Jesus' disciples for eating without washing their hands. Why was that so critical? It was more than just an obsession with personal hygiene, I hope.
That's right. Absolutely, it had to do with the culture God had laid down for His people in the Old Testament, Israel, to create a distinct culture amid a pagan world. And there was lots of dietary laws. There were lots of cleaning laws, and they were breaking them.
Now, Jesus responded by saying that what goes into the body doesn't make us unclean. It's what comes out that's more important, our words and the content of our heart. Later on, the disciples asked for more explanation, and Jesus says, "Are you being willfully stupid?" It actually sounds kind of insulting. Was he just irritated by their low IQ?
No. Yeah, that's funny because in our home, I have two boys, a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old, and stupid is one of the words that's not allowed in our home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, my 7-year-old son is not even allowed to say this, and here is Jesus, the Son of God, walking on earth, and he's calling people stupid. But, yeah, and I think that's why, a lot of the translations of the story try to tone it down a little bit. But, yeah, I think what's interesting is the next line, he says, "Are you being willfully stupid?" And then he says, "Don't you see?" And so in the context of this, I think what Jesus is running into is not that they are lacking in IQ or don't have any book smarts. It's that there's a kind of willfulness about their unwillingness to open up their eyes and see what is in front of them, which is Jesus. And the radical new life, new kingdom, new way of living, new way of being that he's inviting them into. And I think really the key word probably in that whole question actually isn't the one that strikes us the most. It's not the word stupid. I think it's the word willful. And so what Jesus is saying is, are you so stubborn? Are you going to so close down your heart and your mind that you can't see the new thing I am here doing? And are we really going to sit here and argue about who eats and who doesn't, and how we eat and how we don't, is so much bigger than this.
Why did the disciples fail to understand this simple lesson?
Well, that's a great question. I think they just didn't have an open posture to the idea that God might actually do new things in this world. I think they were so stuck in their tradition. They were so stuck in the way things were supposed to be. Because it's really interesting. I mean, in a way, you could read this story, and when the disciples were sort of pushing back against Jesus, what they were defending was the Bible, if you will. They were defending the Old Testament. They were defending what God had given them and how to live. And Jesus was here saying, actually, God is doing something new now. That wasn't the end of the story. What God did then was just the first act, and I'm now here to say the second act has come. And so I think they were so intent on the letter of the details of what God had done that they missed the spirit of what God was always doing and was still doing.
You could say, though, it sort of seems like Jesus is contradicting what God had said in the Old Testament.
He was. Yeah, he was. And that's what unsettles a lot of people. And we're a couple thousand years removed from it, and we've absorbed this into our Christian culture at least. And so we're more okay with this. But if we transport ourselves back to the first century, and there's a prophet among us who's claiming to be the Son of God, and he says things that in some ways at least contradict what had been said earlier, it would cause a lot, you know, potentially a lot of confusion. But part of it was people were not paying attention to the story. It's kind of like, you know, missing the forest for this piece. And the Old Testament, the laws that were given, were never intended to be the way people would always relate to God. They were intended for a time to form a people and an identity, to tell a story, to move people toward Jesus. But now Jesus was here, and something new was happening.
Contradiction probably is a bit more of a controversial word. Perhaps fulfilled would be another way of putting it as well, that Jesus doesn't actually contradict, but maybe just fulfills the Old Testament?
Sure, yeah, you could definitely say it that way. I mean, he was completing what the Old Testament had begun. The reason I used contradiction was not to say that Jesus was in any way antithetical to the Old Testament, because he absolutely was not.
Yeah.
And he certainly was not antithetical to God. What I mean is that there's times and seasons where God says go left, and there's other times where he may say go right. And we need to pay attention to what God is actually saying in the moment now, so we hear God's voice and we're responding to what is true. We're not just responding to lifeless tradition.
Jesus had actually criticized the Pharisees for setting aside the commands of God in order to observe their own traditions. He was addressing basically their hypocrisy, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they had added on a whole lot of rules that God had never said. And so in a sense, the disciples were reacting, and the Pharisees were reacting to Jesus because he seemed to be saying something different than what some of had been said before. But on another level, he was simply saying something different than all that had been added on to what God had said. And so I think that's true today. I mean, I think there's all kinds of things as a church that we've probably sort of wedded to our culture and to our theology and to our beliefs that really are more about what we've added to what God has said than what God has actually said.
I mean, that is evident through history. We've really held to some great misinterpretations of Scripture, even when they're hypocritical and contrary to God's nature. I mean, I'm sure you've got some examples of that to share.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, kind of, it's almost cliche now to say, you know, the Crusades, and at least in the American context, slavery, many of these things, at times, certain movements defended these things in the name of God. I don't know if you're familiar with the novel To Kill a Mockingbird, but there's this incredible line in it by the character named Miss Maudie, and she's talking to a young girl named Scout, and the line in To Kill a Mockingbird says that Miss Maudie stopped rocking and her voice hardened. "You are too young to understand it," she said, "but sometimes the Bible in the hand of one man is worse than a whiskey bottle in the hand of another." And so what Miss Maudie is saying is the Bible is true. And the Bible is our hope, and it's the story of Jesus. But that doesn't mean that everything somebody uses the Bible to do is true.
Well, we all hold on to flawed ways. We choose not to see it, I think, even though it might be obvious. Let's be honest. We are, at times, willfully stupid ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
And for me, for sure. I mean, I know that a lot of times my struggles in my life, being a dad, being a husband, being a pastor, a writer, a father, it's not so much the things that I don't understand that I have problems with, and there's plenty of those, but that's not usually what really causes me the problem. It's the things that I actually do understand, and I'm just not choosing to obey. And I think, you know, life in some ways can be pretty simple. It's loving God and loving others. And yet, on those two scores themselves, I actually come up pretty darn short.
Mm. You're not alone. You don't worry about that at all, Lynn. It can be painful to let go of, I guess, those traditions or familiar things that we know and embrace the new. But there's great reward when we do that, isn't there? I mean, in your book, you give the example of an expecting parent.
That's right. Whenever my wife was pregnant with our firstborn, Wyatt, one evening we were just talking about, you know, all the change and the chaos that was about to come. And Miska, my wife, said, "You know, we're going to have to let go of the good we have now. And by that she meant, you know, we've been married for 5 years, had each other to ourselves, our life was pretty stable, and there wasn't a lot of chaos in it. We're going to have to let go of the good we have now in order to accept the good that God is sending us. And that was going to be her son. And so I think that's the way it is in many areas of our life, that we have to relinquish things that we've clung to, perhaps too tightly, so that God can give us something new, a new gift that will grow us in new ways and stretch us in new ways and bring new joy and new hope to us.
This last question is for those people listening tonight who might be facing a new season or perhaps are being challenged to change their old ways. How would you encourage them to look beyond the old ways and embrace the new?
Well, I'm a Christian, and so the first thing I would say is to allow the power and the love and the reality of Jesus Christ to take deep root in our heart. And then I would just say, really simple, have courage. you know, don't be afraid of stepping into unknown territory or relinquishing something that's given us great comfort, because there is nothing good that will ever come without some level of risk or unsafety or letting something go, because it's about change and transformation. And I would just say, have courage and joy and trust and roll the dice.
Wynn, thank you so much for being part of Open House.
Well, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.